Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Camilleri, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm very pleased to have with me today in the studio for University Matters on Campus FM, Professor Ronald Sultana. Just the usual word about my guest. Professor Sultana is Professor of Educational Sociology and Comparative Education at the University of Malta, where he directs the Euro-Mediterranean Centre for Educational Research. The acronym is EMSA. He has studied education in Malta, the UK and New Zealand, and was Fulbright Fellow at Stanford University, USA. He's the founding editor of the Mediterranean Journal of Educational Studies and represents the region on the editorial board of several international journals of education. Professor Sultana is the author or editor of 21 volumes and has published over 100 articles in chapters in refereed journals and books. His research has taken him to several countries in the Mediterranean region, Africa and Europe, and he has been an advisor to a number of agencies, including UNESCO, UNICEF and GIZ, the Commonwealth Secretariat, the European Union and various ministries of education. Much of his work relates to educational innovation and evaluation and the linkages between education and work, including career guidance and educational development. Welcome to the program, Professor Sultana. You've been on University Matters before, of course, to talk about your very stimulating work. But today we're here to talk mostly about a new degree, the official title of which is Masters in Education Policies for Global Development. And that's quite a big title. Could you explain what is a joint master's?
Right, okay. A joint master's, well, it's an attempt to set up a consortium of universities that offers a degree in a particular area where the shared expertise between this consortium actually adds value to the course content and the curriculum. In this case, it's a joint master's partly funded by the European Commission, by the Erasmus Plus program, which had already given us some funds for the first 2 years in order to get together, to develop the curriculum, and to learn how to work together. It's not as easy as it sounds, despite the fact that we are academics from universities.
Doesn't even sound easy.
No, it is not easy at all. It's a group that gets on very well together. We have this similar ideological orientation towards education and development, but the different traditions within each university, despite being within the European area of research, is so different sometimes that it makes collaboration very challenging.
And which are the universities involved in this particular consortium?
Right. The lead partner is the Autonomous University of Barcelona, a very well-known university, and there's the University of Oslo. There's a faculty of education there which specializes particularly in education and development in the African region. The Barcelona University specializes mainly in Latin America. We had the University of Sarajevo with us at first to also look at the Balkan region. The University of Amsterdam, which has specialist knowledge and experience in education in Southeast Asia. And then our university here with kind of the specialization in the Mediterranean region, particularly the what we call the MENA countries, the Middle East and North Africa countries. So between us, we had a very good representation of the different regions with not only research knowledge, but also practical experience in these different regions.
In fact, it is interesting to note that the Autonomous University of Barcelona and the University of Oslo actually do have research programs that are dedicated to African region or the Middle East, or, you know, it's quite encouraging that these universities actually have these areas of research?
I mean, as with the University of Malta, with this rector, the present rector and the previous one particularly, internationalization is really very much on the cards for universities nowadays, both for to extend their influence, but also for financial reasons very often, in order to encourage mobility between students and lecturers and to have joint projects. Practically all the universities I'm associated with have a very strong international agenda. But many, of course, have their own areas of excellence, and that area of excellence within education sectors, anyway, is linked to particular regions. And usually it's either colonial ties or post-colonial ties. It's linked to geographical proximity, language, let's say, for my colleagues from Barcelona, the fact that they speak Spanish obviously opens quite a lot of opportunities in Latin America. Which are not open to me because I don't speak Spanish, although English is the lingua franca, nevertheless, in most cases.
What about the choosing the students? I know that you had a large number of eligible applicants, and you chose only 21 a large number. What were the main criteria that you and your colleagues used in what really must have been quite a difficult choice to make?
Yes, it was quite laborious because we had about 186 eligible applicants. We had more, but some were not really eligible. We divided these in groups, and we had teams of three academics, one from different universities, looking at the students' profiles according to a pre-established set of criteria, the most important of which was, of course, academic excellence. But we did ask them to write a motivation letter, which was really quite important because we could get a sense of what they were after, and also comments by referees. On the basis of that, we could make a roughly quite well-informed selection, shortlisting, and then we actually also interviewed people to make sure that we're getting the right people on board. This is an area, I mean, working in education, first of all, this is a people-oriented field, but also working in education in developing contexts, in developing country contexts. This requires a very complex set of competences, a skill set which is not often easy to come across, because you can have people who are very bright but don't relate well, or, you know, and we really needed to have a very, you know, very good mix of both social skills, of communication skills, of an ability to synthesize a lot of information and make sense of it and actually translate that into practical work within developing contexts. And also, we have quite a strong value orientation. I mean, this is about development. It's about working in countries where there's poverty, sometimes very, very, I mean, very difficult situations for people to survive. And you really cannot go for this if you're just after the money. You need to have a set of humanistic values that, and also a certain understanding of politics, which includes geopolitics, as we might have the opportunity to describe later on and to discuss. And we ended up with a group of 21 extremely sharp youngsters, I mean, not so young, but many of them with experience in international work already behind them. And they're just a delight to work with. They're very challenging for us as lecturers because we're kept on our toes all the time. But they are la crème de la crème. You could say they come from a lot of countries, Philippines, China, Taiwan, Ghana, Nigeria, I mean, you name it, they're there.
Wonderful.
Yes, very, very nice, diverse group, yeah.
Can I, just a matter of interest, gender balance?
We had that in mind, gender and regional balance. We had to be very careful because the funding agency, which is the European Commission, while wanting equity, is very careful not to impose, let's say, you know, certain criteria. We ended up with many more women than men, on the course, partly because education in itself tends to be a very feminized profession, and working in development also attracts somewhat more women than men. I've been around the world working with agencies, and most of the agencies working in developing countries are mainly resourced by women. It's just the nature of the field. It tends to attract nurturing people, people who want to do good. It's not that men don't want to do that, but perhaps there are other dynamics that come in.
What about the first degree that they had to have, this is a master's, obviously. Were you looking for bachelor's educational?
Not just education, actually. We were looking for people with a social science background. So we have people with economics, social work, education, but also the humanities. We had lots of applicants from people who teach English, for example, who tend to have an international orientation. They want to see the world, and they thought that this might be the right master's for them. We had to be very careful to kind of weed out those who were mainly after the buzz of studying abroad. This is a very generously funded program. If you're a student with a scholarship, and we have 21 scholarships, I mean, most of the money that the commission gives actually goes to fund student mobility. Sees to it that students are, you know, have enough money to live in Barcelona for a semester, in Amsterdam or Oslo, and then Malta, and to do an internship and to do their research. Everything is fully funded and generously funded. They are extremely lucky to have this opportunity, and I'm sad that no Maltese applicants actually were attracted by this program.
That's an interesting point. I'm sure we could talk about that as well. The University of Malta, EMSA, is formally responsible for a certain number of ECTS.
Just five in the summer school.
And the summer school. What will be the university's contribution in real terms during the summer school? And also, I suspect that you have your own input also in general in the rest of the course.
That's correct, yes. I mean, the way we've divided the responsibilities, I was responsible for the curriculum, so for actually organizing people around the knowledge base that we wanted to make sure, you know, that these students did get. So it was quite an important task. But since I'll be on sabbatical next year, hopefully I'll be on sabbatical next year, this means that we couldn't have them in Malta in my absence. So we've organized it in such a way that they only come for the summer school, which is worth five ECTSs. The summer school will focus on the issue of migration, refugees, and education, which is the issue of this era for a number of reasons, not just wars, but also global warming and the rest of it. So we're trying to have an in-depth look at what that means for education. That's my main responsibility, but obviously we travel to teach in the different universities. I have input in the different study units, as do some of my colleagues who go there to teach on the research methods course or on other courses. And we obviously are involved in the administration, in the evaluation. I've been responsible for writing up the guidebooks for the students, and so on and so forth. So there's a fair distribution of work across the consortium. Yeah.
And the students will be obviously coming here to do the summer school, but they'll be doing part of the course at Barcelona, part of the course in Oslo, and part of the course
in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, yes.
Right. So, yes, depending on the electives they choose, they'll be following these courses. Some might end up coming to Malta, let's say, if they want to do their dissertation here, or if they want to do their internship. That's during the second semester. That is, the course has a very strong component in terms of building up knowledge and skills as well in terms of doing research. But we also wanted to have a very practical component. And that entails, if you're going to work in education in developing contexts, it's important to be placed as an intern in such an organization such as UNICEF or the German Development Agency or the British one or the Norwegian one in a country where we give them the go-ahead that they can actually go to. We're very aware that some of them have an interest in education in conflict areas. This raises a whole host of issues about safety, about our responsibility towards the students, and so on and so forth. But we have a lot of associate partners who we can trust and who have accepted to take on one of our interns. And they learn a lot from that experience, obviously.
When we talk about a master program with a European perspective in the field of development, and I'm quoting material that I was reading about it, what are we really saying?
Okay. Well, you can kind of look at it from different angles. I suppose it's European in the sense that it's a European initiative, which could only happen thanks to European funding. So that's the European bit. But there's another aspect which is a bit deeper than that, which is if we had to ask, what would be a European perspective on helping countries that are developing? in my experience, I've seen countries like the States, for example, that actually do put a lot of funding into development. But along with that funding comes a particular political agenda very often. And sometimes that political agenda is pushed, let's say, by the World Bank, or by the IMF, or by particular interest groups, often corporate interest groups, which means that when they sink money, they put money up either as soft loans or actually donations, they're expecting something back. Very often it's very, very highly political. I mean, I've seen, for example, in Egypt, the American involvement in the development of a curriculum. There were huge quarrels between, you know, local experts and American experts as to how to represent history, what kind of ideologies to promote in civics textbooks. It raises quite a lot of issues. I would hope that European work in developing countries is less ideologically, let's say, bound. This is what I hope. I'm not sure it's the case. But certainly with GLOBED, we have made a commitment from the start that we make our values very clear. It's about respect of different cultures, respect also of different understandings of democracy and critiques of liberal democracy as we know it in the West, that we actually critique capitalism and global capitalism and corporate capitalism and the impact it has not only on not alleviating poverty, but sometimes creating poverty and inequality internationally. So it is upfront very political, and we associate these values with some of European traditions, the Enlightenment in particular, where the notion of equity, of respect towards the other, of tolerance, of multiplicity of views are very much at the heart of how we teach and what we do. So this has been the leitmotif driving the curriculum development process and hopefully in the way we teach.
Why do you think globalization is altering the capacity of states to cope? This is mentioned in one of the promotional video. Why should globalization be creating this problem, and what is it not coping with?
Well, I mean, globalization is very much at the heart of a lot of what we're doing. That is, we're addressing the issue of globalization. We're looking at how the global and the local interact. I mean, we don't think of globalization as simply an imposition of agendas onto a very passive country or set of countries. There's a horrible word, glocalization, which tries to capture this dynamics between the give and take and the kind of compromises that are reached between global agendas and local realities. In relation to education, I remember a minister, one of the Maltese ministers of education, telling me that he increasingly feels that he's a bit like a child on a train, on one of these playground trains, where the child is very happy kind of playing at driving the train, but the train is on a set of rails that have been set there before. So as a minister, he felt he was gesturing at driving, but actually the agendas had been set before. Globalization has that kind of tendency. It has removed from many countries the autonomy to make decisions about their education systems. I mean, there's a lot of global steering of what education should be about. Among them, a rather nasty way of comparing education systems through strategies like PISA, for example, which is the Program for International Student Assessment, which Malta has participated in recently, like TIMSS, which looks at maths and science, like PIRLS, which looks at literacy. So these kinds of global assessment of students leads countries to be in a league table. We're often very low in this league table, and leads to stressing some aspects of education, maths, science, for example, over and above general culture, values education, political literacy. All this is not tested, so it becomes less and less important. And we see this pressure also with our local curriculum, where maths and science keep being, you know, pushed forward at the expense of other aspects of the curriculum. So coping with these pressures is not easy for a particular state.
One of the things also that I came across was a mention that in the course students would be provided with tools to understand the changing role of the state, as you've just described, in this globalized role. In the lecture room, how are you going to actually do this? I mean, you're going to have people with different contexts, coming from different backgrounds, perhaps having done different field work. Some of them will already have been a little bit in the field. How do you actually put that across? It must be quite difficult.
Well, we will certainly, I mean, we've started teaching and we've learned that many of these students bring particular experiences with them. For example, one of them, I'm just thinking of one of them who has worked a lot in Burundi, for example. So a lot of our teaching is in a sense, very theoretically engaged. We want to make sure that the theoretical lenses are very clear to them, the differences between them and the implications for action. But we also build case studies with them. So case studies are extremely important for us. And these case studies could, for example, if we take, let's say, education in conflict zones. My role has been to discuss my experiences, which I have already spoken about with you earlier on, about my experience in Palestine, for example, and the issues that arise out of trying to do educational work within areas marked by conflict, or in Kosovo, or in other places of the world. So we build on case studies, but we latch these on to theoretical frameworks and lenses, and we try to make sense of that. It is difficult work, but I think the case studies ground it in realities that have been lived and experienced. And I think this balance between theory and actual experience on the ground is helping the students kind of make sense of it, make sense of the issues. The internship will help them to do this at a more personal level. So we start with broad ideas and then we go down to specific areas that the students want to work with within contexts.
Interpersonal skills are mentioned very much in the description of this course as overlapping with other competencies. Mm. How important are these interpersonal skills?
Oh, they're absolutely vital. I mean, I've been in contexts where, let's say, a UK consultant comes in to work with an agency, and I've had people commenting, let's say, local people saying, oh, I'd never work with this guy, or he thinks it's funny, but he's actually insulting us. Like, for example, I remember very clearly in Kosovo, one of the lead partners in a project went to pick up a guy, a consultant, and the consultant, in a joking kind of, said, oh, you have a second job as a taxi driver. The local expert really felt put down. He told me, I won't speak to this guy. The guy didn't mean it. So I'm just trying to show by a practical example how these relationships, interpersonal relationships, are absolutely crucial in dealing with local experts in education, in dealing with people in schools, and in dealing with communities. I mean, I remember once being in Sabra and Shatila, the two infamous refugee camps in Lebanon. I was so moved by the poverty that I was almost tempted to put my hands in my pocket and give some dollars that I had. And I was smacked on the hand by my colleague, don't do that. You will do a lot of damage that way. I mean, in terms of actually, you know, it's humiliating, even though they are in poverty. And also you will create an imbalance within the context, because they're starting, why did they visit that household and not another one? They got money and we didn't. So there's a lot, it's very complex, and there's a lot of sensitivities around this. So while there are lots of technical competencies, and we've done a brilliant job going through adverts that, you know, offer jobs in education and development to see what competencies these agencies require, and we try to build them up in our curriculum, we cannot just focus on the technical. The interpersonal, and I would say intrapersonal, are absolutely vital.
In the video that I watched on the website, your film talking to your students about the responsibility of knowledge acquired. Mm. Could you expand a bit on that?
Yes, that has always been an issue for me, that the more you know, the more responsibility you have. And I can just perhaps a little vignette to illustrate what I mean. I was in a school in Hebron and talking to young girls in a secondary school about their realities in a besieged city. This was during the Second Intifada. And one girl stood up and said, "We've told you about our story. Now you must go and tell the people out there what you've seen, because they do not know." And it's quite a responsibility. I mean, of course, it's exciting for me to go abroad, to listen to stories, to hear, to see other realities. But with that comes, with that knowledge comes responsibilities, which we have to share, let's say, on a radio program, through academic articles, and wherever I go. So what we see, injustices sometimes, inequalities, I mean, we have a responsibility to speak about them and to make them known. Because many of these people feel they are voiceless, that they're somehow their experiences are not known, and we have a responsibility, if we work in this field, to get these stories out there.
I think that the temptation to come back and perhaps write something but not actually verbalize what you've been through can be tempting.
Yes,
can be tempting.
Yes, yes, yeah,
but
yeah.
Yes, of course, important to talk about it. Just a last very quick question. Really, we've come to the end, about education in the international community. We've spoken about the difficulties, obviously, are there, but is it possible to really create some sort of an education that is not one that fits all, but one that everybody understands? Or is it really what the point you're making with this course is, that everything has to be looked at in an individual way?
It's a balance between remembering that we are global citizens and that there are some aspects that we cannot possibly just, individualize and say, you know, it's only specific to Malta. And let's say awareness of environmental issues is now something absolutely crucial that everybody must know about. So there are, being able to live with diversity is crucial. Having said that, you have to balance it with the specificity of context. That is, each context has its own specific challenges, and you interpret some of the broader knowledge base that every global citizen should have by relating it to the specific context in which citizens live. So it's a balance between both. I think that there is such a thing as a global education agenda, and therefore global policies, but these have to be both examined carefully, like privatization is one of the major issues, and considered within the local context, because it plays itself out differently in different situations.
Well, we've come to the end of our time. I'd like to thank Professor Ronald Sultana for coming to talk to us on University Matters today about this new Masters in Education Policies for Global Development. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye. Il-programm li għadkom kemm smajtu kien miġġub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsins Foundation.